kind of see the game. I just play wherever I want. I don't even have a plan. So when I see when I see an open space on the court, I try to play there. Or if I think that maybe she will run there, I try to play behind her back or something like this. Yeah, me and my coach, we had a plan today. But again, I didn't remember anything during the match. So yeah, I just try to play as I feel and that's it.
You have just started working with Conchita Martinez. Does that mean you don't need her anymore?
No, I still need her. She's giving me great support. And okay, sometimes I can remember a little information. But yeah, having her by my side, it's an amazing advantage for me. And I'm really happy that she still works with me.
So she's happy to do that. Last question. Big upset in the match before. You're playing Jasmine Paolini in the semifinals. Just a quick thought of the match.
I played her in Madrid. It was a really tough match, mental-wise and game-wise. She plays really fast. She moves really fast, and she goes for it. It doesn't matter the situation or the score. So I think it will be a little bit like today, so I will just try to play the same level and with the same cold head, if I can say that, and we'll see what will happen.
I'm sure you come up with a plan. Mira, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Well done. Qualifier pour la demi-finale, Mira Andreeva.
Well, I think her speeches are almost as good as her performances, Mira Andreeva. Amazingly mature off the court as well as on the court. And her mother is busy taking the congratulations of all her team in the stands, Conchita Martinez as well, and through to her first semi-final. And we're going to get a first Grand Slam finalist as she plays Jasmine Paolini. That's going to be a fascinating match.
And she touched on having played her recently, and we've seen Paolini just having such a superb tournament. She's actually out on court at the moment, Paolini, and about to, well, within range with Sarah Errani, the former finalist here as well, the Italian who's still going around playing some great tennis in her mid to late 30s against the American Navarro and Schneider. They won the first set, the Italian 6-3. They are 5-2 up in the second, one service break. So she could well be through to two semi-finals, Paolini. Andreeva just spoke about the support of the crowd then and how much she appreciated it against someone who has done as much on the court in the last couple of years as Sabalenka. Yep. What a star she's becoming.
Yeah, it's amazing. She's still got a doubles to play today, Andreeva. She's due out with Vera Zvonareva, the veteran Russian player, who was former world number two. They're playing Kostyuk and Ruse in the quarterfinals over on Court Simon Mathieu. So I don't think we'll be seeing Mira Andreeva in press anytime soon. She'll obviously take a bit longer, play her doubles, and then come in after that. But yeah, phenomenal performance, amazing maturity. Just the way she finished that last point. Sabalenka had the court seemingly open. She guessed right, and when she got there, she just lifted the most delicious of backhand topspin lobs over. You almost knew she was going to do it, and she finished it off brilliantly. So she is through to a first semi-final. This was her first quarter-final of a slam. Now she's into a semi-final, and we've been waiting for her sort of to make a real big breakthrough, and this is clearly it. She will play Jasmine Paolini in the semi-finals tomorrow. So a lot of tennis for Andreeva to play. Doubles tonight, get ready for a semi-final tomorrow. The other semi-final, of course, will be between Iga Świątek and Coco Gauff, who won yesterday. And Paolini, who beat Elena Rybakina today from having won the first set pretty easily. Rybakina hit back in the second, but the third was a topsy-turvy affair. And amazing to see Paolini come through that match.
Well, she started exceptionally well, and Rybakina really struggling from the ground. But when she hit back in the second, you thought, and then you saw the body language from the Italian at the start of the third when she won that first service game, and you thought, this is not someone who is going to lie down easily. She's going to fight and take this all the way. And what a player she's becoming as well. Just had an exceptional year so far.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing year. Number 12 seed, won in Dubai and through to her first semi-final of a slam at the age of 28. But it wasn't Elena Rybakina's best day. And we can hear what she had to say in press.
Elena, tough result for you today, but a great run through to the Roland Garros quarterfinals. Can you just give us your overall thoughts on the performance today and then just the experience here as a whole?
Yeah, it's been tough match today, and of course not the result I wanted, but overall I think it was a great couple of matches here I played, and yeah, now I'm just looking forward already for grass season.
Thank you. Hi. I don't know if you also speak Italian, because your coach seems to be Italian. No, you don't. Okay. What happened today? Because, I mean, Paolini was playing well. You were a lot of forehands that you missed. And there is any reason? It was just a bad day at the office. How do you explain it?
Well, yeah, it's definitely not the greatest day. And she played really well. She started much better. She was moving good. I started a bit slow, and she was aggressive from the first ball. And then I was just trying to find my game, which was always like I was step back, and I was trying to fight through. But in the end, yeah, as you say, it's not the greatest day in the office. And I was close, but she won, and in the end, I'm just, I need to focus now on the grass season.
Hi, a couple of days ago, you said that you prefer like a heavier condition in terms of playing on the clay, and today it's kind of sunny. So do you think this kind of condition, it's a little bit tougher? It works as a like advantage for your opponent?
Yeah, today is definitely, it was hotter and the ball was flying much more. But I think in the end, my legs were not there. No matter which conditions, if it's slow or fast, I should have been moving better, and some decisions, a lot of unforced errors. So I'm not, of course, really happy with the performance, but it is what it is. It's tennis. Not every day you can play good, so I will try to take some good things from this match, try to analyze, and just move on.
Is there any particular reason why the legs weren't there today? Was that a surprise to you? Was it just one of those days, bad day at the office?
It was bad day, and as I was saying, I was struggling a little bit with the health issues past few weeks, so I think it's just all together. But in the end, no matter all these things which were maybe happening outside of the court, I managed to get to the quarters, and I think it's a pretty good result. Of course, I always want to win, but a lot of tough opponents, a lot of matches, and I think overall it's been positive French Open for me.
Looking at the positive things of these past 2 weeks, what do you take away?
Well, definitely the way I was managing some moments on the court, not maybe feeling so well, and I think it's always a lot of things to discuss with the team after the event like this, and yeah, we will see how we're gonna structure the rest of the year, because still a lot of tournaments in front, and the schedule is not easy. Also, Olympics is coming, so we will try to do everything possible to be prepared for all these events.
It's the end of Roland Garros. We may say it may be like a half season gone. I was wondering if you could tell us how satisfied or unsatisfied you are with the first part of the season. You won three tournaments. You had a few probably disappointing retirements because of health issues. What do you make of the first part of the season?
I'm really happy with the results. I mean, I played so many matches, also good wins against top players, and of course, it's a lot of ups and downs from my side, missing some events. Of course, I would like to play everything, but if the budget is on the limit, I cannot do anything. So for now, I'm pretty happy. And if I can continue like this till the end of the year, it's going to be not bad for sure.
Live on radio.
Roland Garros.
Roland Garros.
That was the voice of Elena Rybakina. Not her best day, as she put it, but also a good start to the year, and having been dealing with some off-the-court health issues in the last few weeks, she's sort of content to have got to the quarterfinals. If a little disappointed to have lost out to Jasmine Paolini in the first of the quarterfinals today, Rybakina will be a big threat back at Wimbledon, no doubt, where she won 2 years ago. Paolini will go on to play in the semi-final of a slam for the first time at the age of 28. She'll play Mira Andreeva, the 17-year-old Russian, who has just beaten Arina Sabalenka in three sets, 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, to reach her first semi-final. So we're guaranteed a first finalist, or a first-time finalist, on the women's side. The other semi-final is between Iga Świątek and Coco Gauff. And I think we can, before the night session begins, which we have Alex Dominor up against Alexander Zverev, we can hear how they got to the semi-finals.
So, having saved one match point in quite brilliant fashion, Jabeur's got to do it again. Gauff is serving to her forehand. Deep return right onto the baseline, would you believe it? And Jabeur's going to come in. Oh, no, she hasn't hammered away the overhead. Oh, that she's missed an overhead. I can't believe what I have just seen. I honestly cannot believe what I've just seen. Ons Jabeur, having saved one match point in miraculous fashion, has thrown away the second one. And it's Coco Gauff who celebrates, and she celebrates with real passion. She's out on the court. She's screaming. And she is through to the semi-finals, but Ons Jabeur missing that overhead. She had two chances to get that game back to juice. With the first one, she went straight at Gauff, and with the second one, inexplicably, she missed the court. She goes out, Coco goes through.
Congratulations, what a match, great atmosphere, unbelievable tough opponent. How difficult it was for you to understand the game from Ons, because she plays like with totally different tactics than other players, but you look beautiful and you did a great job.
Yeah, she's a tough opponent, and she's well-loved on tour. And I could tell by the crowd today, I know you guys wanted her to win. And honestly, whenever she's not playing, I cheer for her too. So thank you guys for making it a good atmosphere. The people up there made it really fun for me. I like playing in environments like this, and over here too. Even though you guys were for Ons, I really had a lot of fun. Even when I lost the first set and they were chanting, when I was in the bathroom, I was like, this is just really fun, win or lose. It is.
I have to say that they were pretty divided. I mean, they love Ons, but they love Coco Gauff as well, I have to tell you.
Yeah, there was like two people behind my bench sitting over there, and they were cheering for me, not loudly, but I could hear them and it helped me. And yeah, I know I have a lot of love here in Paris. Trust me, I know. So I really appreciate it, and hopefully you guys can help me make it through the next round.
There was something that we really liked it very much, what you did. You lost the first set, but then you become a little bit more aggressive. That was because you've been playing very well during the clay court season, because you beat her several times, or it's just because your mind was like convinced till the end of the match, I gotta go for it. I don't need to let her do her job.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to be more aggressive. She was playing really well the whole match, and she was hitting a lot of winners on me, which is something I'm not used to against like anybody. So today I was just trying to just be aggressive towards the end. And, you know, I got a little bit tight the last couple match points, but I think I did what I needed to do to win the match.
Coco, we admire you. We respect you. They like you here. We like you here. Good luck for the next round. Coco Gauff.
Thank you.
Qualifié pour la demi-finale de Roland Garros.
Coco, congratulations into your third consecutive Grand Slam semifinal. Just what does that mean to you, and how does this victory mean to you?
Yeah, it means a lot to me. Been trying to do better at being consistent in the big tournaments, and I'm reaching that level of consistency. Obviously very happy to reach the semifinal, but and sure everybody knows I want to go all the way.
When you're down a set in a big match like this, I'm curious how your, I guess, management of these moments has changed over your career, like how stressed or not stressed you are and how that has evolved.
Yeah, she played really well, honestly, the whole match, but especially the first set. I think she, the first three games, I don't even think I saw a second serve. Maybe I don't recall. I think she was serving like 80-something, 84%, and like serving really well. So, you know, when you lose a set like that, it's kind of just, you just try to brush it off. And I know that I should have held serve, especially that one, the game I got broken. I think I had a couple game points. So it's just one of those things. Like, I played one bad, maybe not even game, but like a couple points, and she played a great set. And it's kind of just like, if she can sustain this level the whole match, and then she deserves it. And if my level doesn't rise, then I deserve to lose. So I knew I had to raise my level. And I think, and because I raised my level, I think I just started to play more aggressive and not letting her dictate me off the court. And I know she's going to hit some great shots, like a couple forehand winners she like hit. And I'm just like, you know, there's nothing I can do. And same with the drop shots. When you play her, you know, you're going to get, you know, a couple drop shot winners. And yeah.
Iga said earlier that she thinks your mental game has improved over the course of the 11 times you guys have met. Is that something which you can see as well?
Yeah, I definitely think. And I don't know if it's like something I actively worked on or if it's just maturity. You know, over the years, I think you just get older and learn how to handle the pressures a little bit more. I wouldn't say it's something that I like. I don't have like a mental coach or, you know, anything like that, sports related, but it is something that I knew I had to improve and just be more positive. But I think it just also came with maturity and realizing that I can't, you know, beat myself and also my opponent beating me.
Thinking ahead to your matches against Iga, a feature here last year was you were really looping a lot of balls, and where I was in Rome recently, you kind of came out crushing the ball. I'm not expecting you to reveal your tactic, but I'm just wondering whether you have a clear idea in your mind of now, like how to approach facing Świątek on clay.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, I have to find, you know, a better way to play her than the last times I played on clay, because I've obviously been unsuccessful the last couple times we've played, regardless of the surface and anything. So she's definitely a tough opponent for me and for anybody. But yeah, I think for me, I'll just have to like go back and watch and try to find, you know, what I have to do. I think she's playing great tennis here, so it's going to be a challenge, but I'm going to go into the match with a lot of belief that I can, and I'm going to try to get, you know, a plan for my team and then also my own plan and see where we can find the blend.
Minutes. It is match point to the world number one and defending champion.
Crazy. How I was watching, I want to see the stats of how many unforced errors Świątek has made. But 15-40, second serve.
Match points. Serve down the tee, the backhand through the middle of the court, the backhand through the middle again as Świątek whips the backhand cross court, and it is game, set and match in an hour and 2 minutes. So through two matches, she has lost two games. She defeats the Wimbledon champion 6-love, 6-2.
Iga, wow. Huge congratulations to you. What a flawless performance again today against a Grand Slam champion in Markéta Vondrousova. What was the feeling for you out there on the court in this quarterfinal for Roland Garros?
Honestly, I think everything worked. I feel like I've been serving better than in previous rounds, so that gave me, you know, extra boost of confidence. And overall, I just felt like I'm playing pretty heavy, and I could just, you know, play my game and really go with my tactics and not really overthink anything.
Well, when I see you play, when I watch you play from courtside, it looked to me that nothing can go wrong in your game. You're in total control of everything you're doing. Is it the general feeling you have as well inside, or sometimes you have a little doubt somewhere, or is it just straightforward?
No, today it was pretty straightforward. I'm happy, you know, that I kept my focus, because sometimes I felt like the game was really intense and sometimes the intensity went down a little bit. So I wanted to really, you know, just play my game no matter what was coming back from Mercata. And no, I felt like I was in the zone today.
You certainly was in the zone. Iga, you're going to face Coco Gauff in the semi-final. You guys have played several times in the past across the globe, but twice here, and especially one in the final of Roland Garros, the one you won, of course. What is for you the mindset when you're going to enter the court, the semi-final for Grand Slam? It's an opponent you know. How are you going to prepare for that match?
Honestly, as the same as before any other match. You don't want to change your routines. You know, it's good to just keep going and not think about this match as something huge, but just another match, you know, to not put too much baggage on your shoulders. But I guess Coco is not easy, so she really likes playing on clay, and especially here, I think. So I'll just focus on myself, and I'll prepare tactically, and we'll see.
Final questions. You love this court, Philippe Chatrier. Your first Grand Slam title was here on that right court today. Again, a lot of fans, a lot of Polish flags, a lot of people loving you and showing all the support.
Yes.
I'm sure it must be special.
Thank you very much, guys. Wszystkim z Polski bardzo dziękuję za przyjazd i za wsparcie. And also the French fans, I really love, you know, playing here, and I feel more and more support every year. So thank you for coming, and see you in 2 days.
We'll certainly see you in 2 days. Mesdames et messieurs, merci d'applaudir. Voilà. Iga Świątek, qualifiée pour les demi-finales de Roland-Garros.
Well, it was a really solid performance, probably the best I've had here. So I'm happy that my game is getting better and better every day, and I feel pretty confident today.
Want to look ahead to Coco, if you don't mind. It's been about just over 3 years since you first met her, 11 meetings since then. She struggled to get matches against you and sometimes even sets, but she has made a lot of improvement over those 3 years. So I wonder if you could just tell me what you think of her game now compared to where it was then. And do you think she's making improvements? Do you think she's a tougher opponent than she was 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. I think her mental game is a little bit better, and before it was, you know, kind of easier to crack her, I would say, when you were leading. But I mean, it's normal that she's making progress. She's at that age that, you know, everything goes pretty nicely. If you're working hard, then you will get a progress. So she's probably doing that. And, yeah, I mean, probably every aspect of her game is a little bit better because... Yeah, because it's different, you know, being a teenager on a tour and then being more mature player.
Two questions, if I could. The first one is about your form compared to when you were at this sort of stage of the tournament the last three times that you won. How do you feel you're playing right now compared to those sort of stages?
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Well, I don't really remember how I felt, honestly, because these tournaments are long and... Like, I don't remember, like, every day, I would say. But I remember last year was pretty stressful for me. So every match was, like, kind of like a relief, you know. And now I'm enjoying it more. And I have more satisfaction from just, you know, playing my game. 2 years ago, I would say... in my mind, it felt pretty similar because I just felt like... I had already a great season, and now I can just go for it, you know. And 2020, it doesn't really fit anywhere because it was just all, you know, hectic, and it was all a surprise. So
all new. And the second question is, I've heard people compare watching you and some of your scorelines to Steffi Graf, one of the great players. I just wondered. Whether you, I know she was before your time in terms of age, but have you ever watched any footage of Steffi Graf and and what your thoughts were if you had.
Well, I did, and you know, she's a great champion, and well, it's just nice that anybody would compare me to her, because I feel like, I mean, I don't know her, but I feel like maybe she was kind of a similar person to me, because she also likes to keep her privacy, and now you can see that she's just enjoying life, and she knows that she worked hard, you know, to have a little bit of peace, you know, right now. So and I also heard from, you know, some people on tour that she was also kind of like an introverted and really in the zone and just focusing on tennis and what she wants to do. So that's what I heard tennis wise. I mean, it's hard to compare it because these were totally different times. Probably I don't have such a good slice as hers and the volleys, but it's nice that anybody would compare me to her because she's great.
Hi, Iga. Tennis is a lot of ups and downs. And how do you succeed to stay from outside in what looks like an easy game? How do you succeed not to go out from the game, to stay focused at 100%? And it was the same last game.
I try not to really focus on the score. Sometimes I even forget what the score is, honestly. And just, you know, focusing. I mean, I'm keeping myself busy in terms of thinking about technique and tactics and what I would do with the next point. And I don't really, because of that, I don't really allow myself to have time to, you know, drift off and think about other stuff. Obviously, it's not easy, and it's not like I'm always, you know, able to do that. But usually, when I don't think about the score, and I can reset after each point and start the second point from the beginning, like with the clean sheet, it's the best kind of match for me. So yeah.
If you can think back to here in 2020, obviously very unusual circumstances, but I'm wondering, in what ways, if at all, did winning that first Grand Slam title, the thing all tennis players are striving for, might have changed you on the court, off the court, your perceptions of yourself, and or because I've heard you talk about how different that year was here. Was it the second one, maybe, that had more of that sort of a profound effect?
First one, I mean, I would say, I would kind of lie if I would say that it gave me belief that I can win Grand Slams right now, because I was still, you know, not really sure if it happened by mistake or what really happened, honestly, during these 2 weeks. I had to prove to myself that I was, you know, good enough to win it, and I think I proved that, you know, winning some titles after that and winning in 2022. So the win in 2022 was the most satisfying for me, and I proved everybody and I proved myself that it wasn't a one-time thing, and maybe in the future I'm going to be able to win more tournaments like that. So I would say after 2022 I was the most happy when I won.
I just wanted to ask you, I know one of the reasons you don't like playing in the night is because you want to go to bed at a sensible time. And how important is that for you to get kind of the right amount of sleep? And how much do you measure and kind of evaluate that as part of your kind of, I guess, sports science and medicine and all of that?
Well, honestly, for me, it's kind of a priority. So I had years when, like, everything could, like, throw me off my rhythm, and then I couldn't go to sleep. And I worked pretty hard to be able to, you know, just chill down and, like, not get too stressed the day before as well, you know. So for me, it's really important. And I feel like, you know, the bodies of any of us are more, like, more ready to have, like, the peak of the activity during the day, because like most of you guys also work during the day, like most of the population. Obviously there are people working night shifts, but here I feel like, I don't know, I can adjust to anything. I played many night sessions that were good for me, but it's always comfortable, you know, going back to the hotel at 6 and being able to have a normal night. So, yeah. But now I wouldn't say that night sessions are, like, throwing me off the same way as a couple of years ago. I can adjust to anything.
Paolini circles the mark. There's no doubt about it. And it's match point, Paolini.
going to her towel to get ready to play. The biggest point of a career right here, Paolini.
Never been to a Grand Slam semi-final. Never been to a quarter-final before today. Here she stands, match point against Elena Rybakina. Serves down the tee, 400 turns straight to the backhand from Rybakina. She goes after the backhand. It's going to go long, and Jasmine Paolini has done it. She's beaten Elena Rybakina 6-2, 4-6, 6-4, and she's through to the semi-finals of a Grand Slam for the first time.
Jasmine, there is matches, there is moment in a life that can change completely your whole career. And today, here you are qualified for your first ever semi-final for Grand Slam at 28 years old.
Thank you. It's an unbelievable feeling. Was a really tough match. I think I had a little bit too emotional in the second set. But then I said to myself, okay, it's good. She's a great champion, so it can happen, you know. And yeah, just fight, try to keep it there, you know, to try to hit every ball. And yeah, it worked. I'm here. I on the one.
You said it. You were up 6-2, 4-3, 40-15. Elena is a great champion. She will find a way to come back. Here you are in that third set. It's very difficult. It's very tight. What do you think was for you the key in those moments to get the win at the end?
I think just to, you know, try to stay there every point, to forget what happened in the second set, because I mean, it can happen. It's tennis, so it's normal. But yeah, I managed to come back and to stay there, to stay focused, even if I get the break two times again. But it's okay. I just, you know, accept that and fight again. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much for cheering for me.
I'm coming there. Obviously, we're discovering you. It's your first Grand Slam semi-final, but I think everyone here today felt in love for you, for your game, for your smile, for your attitude. I'm sure you want to say something to this incredible atmosphere.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. I mean, it was my first time playing in this beautiful court. It's a pleasure, I think. It's really a privilege, and I'm happy that I got the win in my first match here, because this is one of the best courts, I think, in tennis. Yes, for sure.
Well, Jasmine Paolini, I can tell you now, it's not a dream anymore. You're in the
Radio Roland Garros.
Game, set and match.
Radio Roland Garros will be with you from 12 local time, broadcasting live from Paris and bringing you ball by ball commentary, exclusive interviews and all the very latest news.
Mi final for Roland Garros. Mesdames et messieurs, merci d'applaudir. Jasmine Paolini, qualifiée pour les demi-finales de Roland Garros.
Second match point chance.
Absolutely superb control as her coach Katrina Martin is up off her feet to be able to make that shot down the line. It was a really dipping ball, good angle from Sabalenka. Not to be, though.
Match point number two, Mira Andreeva on the Sabalenka serve. Serve to the forehand of Andreeva, who returns it deep into the backhand corner. Sabalenka runs around it to the forehand. She's got to hit another forehand cross court. It's on the line. It looks so close to the line. There's a lob coming up from Andreeva. Is it over Sabalenka? Is it? She's done it. Mira Andreeva, 17 years old, puts her hands over her head. She has beaten the number two seed, Aryna Sabalenka, 7-6. Sorry, 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, finishing with the most exquisite backhand lob. What a performance and what a win. She's got her hands over her face. She's waving to the crowd. and she deserves every single bit of the crowd support that's coming from the stands.
Unbelievable performance. You're in your first semifinals of a Grand Slam. How's the feeling?
Honestly, at the moment, I even forgot what was the score because I really tried not to focus on that. And when it was the second match point for me, I was trying to imagine that I'm saving a break point. So I tried to play brave and I managed to win.
That's for sure. And playing in front of a full house of enthusiastic spectators, how does that feel for a 17-year-old?
Honestly, I was really nervous before the match. I knew that she would have an advantage, especially with the crowd. But I'm actually was a little surprised because you guys also cheered for me. Thank you very much for cheering on me today.
So I want to ask you about your tennis intellect, because we can learn how to hit backhands and forehands, but to learn the game is not that easy. At 17, you basically know everything about tactics, it seems to me. How did you learn that?
Honestly, I just... I don't know, I kind of see the game, I just play wherever I want, I don't even have a plan, so when I see when I see an open space on the court, I try to play there, or if I think that maybe she will run there, I try to play behind her back or something like this. Yeah, me and my coach, we had a plan today, but again, I didn't remember anything during the match. So yeah, I just try to play as I feel and that's it.
You have just started working with Conchita Martinez. Does that mean you don't need her anymore?
No, I still need her. She's giving me great support. And okay, sometimes I can remember a little information. But yeah, having her by my side, it's an amazing advantage for me. And I'm really happy that she still works with me.
I'm sure she's happy to do that. Last question. Big upset in the match before. You're playing Jasmine Paolini in the semifinals. Just a quick thought of the match.
I played her in Madrid. It was a really tough match, mental-wise and game-wise. She plays really fast. She moves really fast, and she goes for it. It doesn't matter the situation or the score. So I think it will be a little bit like today. So I will just try to play the same level and with the same cold head, if I can say that. And we'll see what will happen.
I'm sure you come up with a plan. Mira, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Well done. Qualifier pour la demi-finale. Mira Andreeva.
Live on radio.
Roland Garros.
So that was how all the women's semi-finalists were decided. Tomorrow we will see them on court for the two women's semi-finals. They start at 3 o'clock. We'll be on air before that, though, because we've got the mixed doubles final, which is between Desiree Kravchuk of the United States and Neil Skupski against the winners of the match on court 14 right now between Laura Siegemund and Edouard Roger Vasselin. And Akeri and Gonzalez, and they're into a deciding champions tiebreaks, 4-2 Siegemund and Roger Vasselin. We'll keep you up to date with that. But Simon Campers and Courtney Walsh with you until the start of the night session, which is about 20 minutes away before we get replaced by the A-team. But Courtney, just looking back at the two women's quarterfinals today, what's your main takeaway from it all?
Well, I think we'll have a really entertaining, intriguing semi-final. It was certainly a surprise for me that both the winners went through, given the seedings, but not necessarily the way that we saw Paolini in particular playing throughout this tournament. I think she's been really, really strong all the way through. And Rybakina, at different stages, has been excellent, but she also had moments in matches, Elise Mertens, for example, where she did not find her best form. And someone with the intensity and the court speed and the ability to change things up like the Italian, I did wonder whether she would give her a scare. I did think that Sabalenka would be too strong for Andreeva, but as it proved, you know, a star can rise from any moment. She's such a talented young player. Not a surprise that she made it to this stage to be able to get through and just show the poise that she did. Wonderful achievement, and it does shape as an intriguing semi-final tomorrow.
It's worth pointing out that Aryna Sabalenka in the first set in particular was really struggling with what seemed like some stomach pain issues. She took some pills and something else to eat to go with it, but so we don't know exactly what was wrong with her. She definitely wasn't 100% her normal self. I'm just saying, she's looking actually. Her press conference has been delayed until further notice. She was supposed to come in at 8 o'clock. And Mira Andreeva's due in at 8:55, which makes me wonder whether she's still playing her women's doubles tonight or not. It says waiting for schedule on court Simone Mathieu. She was supposed to be playing with Vera Svonareva against Kostyuk and Ruz. So I don't know what's happening there. We'll see if that's going ahead or not, or maybe she's doing her press quickly and then she'll pop out there and do it.
Entirely possible, but just having a look at the breakdown of that match in terms of where the match was won and where the match was lost, and you look at the winners, both women hit about the same number of winners, 43 for Andreeva, which is a fantastic performance, 20 off the backhand wing, 14 winners off the forehand wing, and clearly some great serving as well, 7 aces for the match. Sabalenka, fairly similar, forehand wing more dominant, but unforced errors. Now, we talk about forced and unforced errors, but I think it's a case when you're looking against Sabalenka that a lot of them are unforced, and she made as many unforced errors effectively as what she did in terms of winners, whereas Andreeva was far tighter.
Yeah.
26 unforced errors for the match, only 5 from the forehand wing, 43 for the match. And it was a similar case with Paolini. She was so tight in that first set, so solid. I think she only made one error for that first set, which was exceptionally strong talent. So it goes to show that if you are, as powerful and prodigious ball strikers as these players are, if you can keep the ball in play, even against the very best, it's still the best strategy for winning matches.
Yeah, amazing to think that Mira Andreeva had never been to a semi-final of any tournament before this week. This is her first semi-final. It's a bit like, as Max pointed out on Twitter, Emma Raducanu in the US Open, who reached her first semi-final and then won her first slam title in what was her first final of any sort. So these players can come up quickly, and Andreeva, we've seen her, we saw her here last year, what she can do. She's matured physically and on the court and off the court. She's stronger now, she's faster, she's getting better all the time, and she clearly loves playing here because just loved the way that she, adapted to difficult situations, got soft hands, brilliant lob to finish it off. And regardless of how Sabalenka was feeling, she kept her nerve and herself together under massive pressure.
Oh, significant pressure. It is a Grand Slam quarterfinal on a massive, beautiful stadium court. A superb performance. She was able to blunt some of the weapons from Sabalenka as well. We talked about late in that match when we came on air, the second serve kicking up above her shoulders. But she was still able to get those returns, even when it was higher and more awkward, quite deep, which prevented Sabalenka from attacking her too regularly. So, love the way she played. I did find it quite interesting afterwards when she said, "Well, yes, we discussed plans before the match, but they all went out the window afterwards. I can't really remember, but I'm sure that she's a natural match player as it is, and she has the capabilities to adjust. But I'm pretty sure that some of them will have stuck the plans beforehand. And Sabalenka didn't look well,
no,
but didn't play well either.
No, and Rybakina too. We heard from her earlier You know, she said she's been dealing with some health issues off the court in the last few weeks that haven't left her being 100%. We hope she sorts those out, but she wasn't quite herself either today, not in the same way as Sabalenka, but just it wasn't playing the kind of tennis that we're used to seeing from her. And Jasmina Paolini took full advantage, and Italy have a men's and women's semi-finalist in a Grand Slam for the first time ever, which is amazing. Just looking at Andreeva's live ranking, on the live ranking, she's up to 23. Should she beat Paolini and get to the final, she'll be 16. So that is quite something for a 17-year-old. I think I saw that she's the youngest semi-finalist at Roland Garros since Martina Hingis in 1997. So, you know, she's setting some good marks and emulating some top players. And if she's proves to be half as good as Hingis, she's going to be doing very well. But we are building towards the match of the evening session, which will be between Alexander Zverev and Alex de Minaur.
Ready?
Radio Roland Garros.
Night sessions. Let's start.
Radio Roland Garros.
Night sessions on Radio Roland Garros.
Wonderful!
Keep looking at my watch to see how long it is till the start of the evening session, but my watch has stopped. So that's not very useful. So instead, I'll look at the computer. We're about 15 minutes away from the walk-on between Alexander Zverev, the former US Open runner-up, the number 4 seed this year, and Alex de Minaur of Australia, who's appearing in his first Roland Garros quarter-final. And it's quite handy we've got an Australian with us. Courtney knows everything that is needed to know about Alex de Minaur. But let's start with, before we get to him, let's start with Alexander Zverev. His route to the quarterfinals has not been easy by any means. So what kind of effect do you think the effort that it's put in, that he's had to put in to get to this quarterfinal will have tonight?
When you talk about draws or paths to this moment, round one, Rafael Nadal. No tougher task ever. The hardest first round, and that was a fantastic match. Even though it was three sets, it was a very physical match. The second set in particular was really tight, as he was able to edge through 3-6 and 3. Round two, David Goffin. Now, we know that Goffin's not the player he was, but he was nonetheless a top 10 player and still a very, 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 very good player. So that was not the easiest. You get to round three, Talon Klikspor. He'd gone and trained with Nadal leading into this French Open, Roland Garros, and was playing particularly well. It was leading two sets to one and really had him on the ropes. He had a fourth set, but somehow Zverev, from nowhere, inspired on court, Philippe Chatrier said, "My Roland Garros is not done yet." Through to the fourth round, the round of 16 against Holger Rune. And again, what a battle that was. Down two sets to one. Again, his Roland Garros hopes flaying at the seams, was able to find a way through, won that tiebreak at the fourth set to progress. So it's been an arduous path here, more than 13 hours on the court. But he's someone, I think, who thrives on longer matches. It doesn't seem like it affects him as physically as much as what it might affect other players. So it's a long time on the court, particularly in the last two matches. But I think that he'll be well and truly, fancying his chances leading into this one.
He played well at the Australian Open this year. Had a lead that he couldn't convert. He's also 2 years on from that ankle injury that he suffered against Nadal in the semi-finals here. He feels like he's got a point to prove. There's a lot going on off the court for Zverev. He's got a court case that's ongoing back in Berlin. But he seems to be going about his business as usual. But he's up against Alex de Minaur tonight, who must be pretty excited about this match, I would say.
Well, I think it's his first time from memory on this wonderful court that is the main show court, Roland Garros. So that's something new for him. Quarter final of a clay court major, that's also something new for him. Playing against Zverev is not new for him. He's played him 9 times so far. The German leads that head-to-head 7-2.
But the last five outings, it's 3-2. And it's worth noting that with Dimonor, a lot of his head-to-heads against the very best players are closing. Not so much against Sinner or Alcaraz, they still have the upper hand against him, but basically against the other top liners, Medvedev, for example, who won the first three outings against him, then the last four until, well, it's now 3-2 to Dimonor in the last five matches between the two. He and Zverev have had a couple of really strong battles. It dates back to the Davis Cup when they first met, a fabulous match in Brisbane. I was courtside four going back 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. 7-6 in the deciding set to the German. Wonderful tennis, and most of the matches since then have been really tight. They've only played once on clay, and again, it was a very tight second set. The German progressed, but you know, it'll be fascinating to see what Dimonor can throw against him tonight, how he plays. 10 matches in a row that Zverev has won.
Yeah, because he won in Rome, didn't he?
On clay.
He's very good there.
Made the last three years he's been a semi-finalist here. So his record is outstanding on the surface. But he's coming up against a rival who's getting better and better on the surface. And we saw that 2 days ago when he played Daniil Medvedev. It was an outstanding display. He turned around the first set. He was probably unlucky to lose that first set. He dropped serve in slightly contentious circumstances and then had a couple of points where he didn't quite convert. But from midway through the second set, dominant. Now, the Russian may have had a blister, but I don't think it would have made any difference, truth be told.
How, in what ways has Dimonor improved his game in the last couple of years, would you say?
He uses the phrase incremental improvement. Now, it's not going to knock your socks off. It's it's not something where you go, wow, look at that. That's incredible. But talking to a few of the legends a couple of days ago, Gilles Simon, who was in Medvedev's box a couple of days ago, Fabrice Santoro, Mats Wilander, the three-time champion here and a seven-time major champion. And they point to the fact that by incremental improvement, it's actually evident in Dimonor's game. He's getting slightly stronger. The serve is becoming more of a weapon.
He's not tall.
He's not tall, but he's added at least sort of 13 or so kilometres an hour to that serve, both first and second serve, in the last couple of years. And it's something that Zverev picked up on at the United Cup when he talked about the second serve after he lost to him earlier this year. Said the second serve, it used to be something you could attack. It was coming through quicker and was harder to attack. So that was a very, very good performance, you know, in terms of an insight. Simon, in particular, said that because he's got a bit more pace on that serve and because he's a bit stronger, he's not getting pushed as far behind. So he said he used to be very good at being able to transition from defence to offence, but he was always starting the points pretty much in a negative position, and it's hard to do. But he said now that he's starting in what they call a neutral position, or perhaps even in front if the serve's good enough, fantastic. Philander, would love to see him come forward more. You touched on that. We had a discussion the other day where he came in more than 100 times against Medvedev.
Amazing.
So I think we'll see more of the same. I don't think he wants to engage necessarily in long rallies against his rival, unless his rival feels a little fatigued, in which case that may be...
Well, you would think, if you look at their two game styles, you would think that there will be a lot of long rallies. They both love grinding it out. Maybe Dimonor is actually more aggressive than Zverev as a rule. Zverev's quite passive.
Well, I think, I mean, this is the point that Simon, who, is a very, very good tactician and played him twice when he was just on the tour and clearly in the Medvedev box for a reason, he said, I would not call him a passive player at all. I think he's very much an aggressive player. Certainly, he's got great defensive skills and scrambling skills, but he's someone who is going to take the game to you. He's certainly someone who's an offensive player. So it will be interesting to see. The wet conditions or the slower conditions at Roland Garros this year have arguably played to his favour. Not something he ever thought would imagine. He always thought that it might need to be hot and lively for him to be able to have a chance to hit through his rivals. Instead, what's proven the case is that his rivals can't hit through him because it's a bit slower. So
will that be different tonight? Is it a night session, so it is a bit slower again? It's not that warm.
It's a new experience for him.
Yeah.
So, as I said, this is not something we've seen. He played his matches outdoors in the first week where there was lots of delays, lots of interruptions between play. When he came into, after his third round win over the German Jan Lennard Struff, who won a title not too long ago on clay in Munich and was a finalist of the Madrid Masters going back a year ago, Dimonor said, "This is actually a completely different tournament for me. A, I'm looking forward to being able to play a match where I can get through uninterrupted, and B, I'm going to be on the main stadium courts, and that's something different for me here. He's used to it in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But here it's a different matter. So it's a challenge because we know the dimensions of courts can throw different... the dimensions don't change in terms of the actual
court,
but the size, how far back the backdrop is for the baselines, the side between to the sidelines in terms of the sponsor reporting. Even as we've talked about, being able to hear your coach and the instructions, because this is a bigger court, so they sit a little further away. There's a few different elements to it.
What about, the matchup itself looks like a lot of long rallies, but the drop shot, is that something that Dumanoir's got in his locker?
It is something that he has got in his locker, and I think it's a very good drop shot. He was a little awry early on against Medvedev, but once he got rolling and once the confidence built, he used it regularly. And against Medvedev, I think he's going to need to do that. Now, Medvedev's...
Against Zverev, yeah.
Oh, sorry, against... Yes. The German's a very good mover. I think he actually covers the court really well. He's got those long levers, so he can get to that. So they have to be good, but... No, I think Santoro was talking about this, someone who used the exploited the angles of a court and had the deftest of touch, the beautiful drop shots, the lovely lobs. And he talked about Dumanoir and said, I really like the way he can cut around the ball, can shape it, can keep it low, can hit drop shots when needed. So I think he has got those capabilities, yes.
He'd never been past the second round here until this year, so he's already... in uncharted territory, almost maybe playing as if nothing to lose would be one way of putting it. But how I imagine that back home in Australia, his run is gathering some attention.
Oh, absolutely. There's headlines everywhere. There's front page, certainly back page stories. The broadcasters are tuning in. You see colleague Chris Clary, for example, getting calls from the ABC, the national broadcaster, wanting to discuss what he's doing. He's a very popular player at home. They love the way he goes about his business, that he's, I suppose, the antithesis in a way to Nick Kyrgios, who has got some support but can be a little polarising at times. Not everyone loves him in Australia because of some of his antics. So Dumanoir, in contrast, great leader and very much someone that that is well supported in Australia.
And he's talked quite a lot, hasn't he, about being... Well, I mean, we talk about it. He's the leader of this generation of Australian players. And they all seem to look up to him for a number of reasons.
And it's interesting. Players like Thanasi Kokkinakis, who are actually older, and Nick to an extent as well, love what he does in terms of the examples he sets. Talking to Thanasi after his win over Medvedev a couple of nights ago, he said, just outstanding... at Davis Cup, when you train with him, well, put it this way, he's like the barometer to how your game is. He said if you can get a set off him, you know you're hitting it well. If you're getting wiped by him, you know you need to raise your level. And he said, but he does game in, game out, practice session, match in, match out. He gives his all, and there's not a lot that changes in terms of his level. So you know the barometer. It's where you know where you sit in terms of your own form.
Yeah, his work ethic is second to none. I mean, he's one of the fastest players out there, if not the fastest. I mean, I can't think really of anyone who's faster around the court than Alex Dumanoir. And he's going to need all that speed to get back the heavy hitting of Zverev, who's improved his forehand in the last year. In Rome especially, he had a lot of good forehands. It used to be that he would just lean back on it, just wouldn't quite get his transfer of weight right from the back foot to the front, but he's sorted that out, which is pretty impressive midway through your career, having, you know, when you're used to playing one way or the other. So it's going to be a fascinating contest. We're just a couple of minutes away now from the walk-on. I'll give you a quick update, though, because, first of all, we can tell you who won that other mixed doubles semi-final, because the mixed doubles final, the match between Roger Vasselin and Siegemund, or involving them, was into a tiebreak, a champions tiebreak in the third, and they, let me see, whether Siegemund have won it or not. They won their quarterfinal before. We'll catch up with that in a minute. But a quick update on Mira Andreeva, who we said was coming into press at 5-9. She has pulled out of her doubles for obvious reasons. I think she's got a single semi-final tomorrow. Probably thinks it's not wise, and that's a very sensible decision by her to to just concentrate on the singles tomorrow. So we get ready for the start of this men's quarterfinal. And we've got the balls, and they're already on the court. And now we're being treated to the lovely scenes of Paris and of Roland Garros that the fans get treated to on the big screens. Stadium already full.